I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. We are coming to you from the studio of the Most Holy Name of Jesus today. It's not a saint.
No, it's certainly not.
It's not, no. But are you going to knock the Holy Name of Jesus? You
put me in a bind here.
It was the name of my last parish, the last two ones. We had Margaret Mary, we had...
St. Paul.
We did St. Paul, so it's time to throw some favors towards the people of my past. We're at the Most Holy Name of Jesus studio. I'm joined, as per usual, by the dynamic duo, Father Garrett Burns.
How's everybody doing?
And Father Drew Hoffman.
What's up?
So actually recording this podcast today, this is the first, I don't know if it's office-like duty, but this is the first, I even feel weird calling it work. This is work. Being with you two is work.
People think podcasting is not work. It's high-level work.
Man. And
a lot of people... It exhausts us. We're going to get a little rest after this.
That's
probably.
Right. That's
I'm
right.
going to need it. Dealing with you two.
Well, this is the first work I have done in the office area in like 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, I was on a mission trip with the guys at the House Formation. We went out to Christ in the City to do homeless ministry out in Denver, Colorado. Shout out to the people in Christ City. Great week. Highly recommend, if you don't know anything about Christ in the City, look them up. Big shout out to them. So that was 2 weeks ago. And then this last week, I was on my yearly retreat. It's a good retreat. A lot of time for quiet, a lot of time for prayer, silence. Brought some things home to work on, resolutions, things like that. Good retreat. But I'm not sure if many of our listeners realize that diocesan priests are required by canon law to make a retreat every year. Typically, it's about 5 days. For me, in my 12 years of priesthood, I don't think I've ever gone to the same place twice. I think I've done two at the Spiritual Life Center, so that's the only repeat location for me. I don't know about you guys. What are some of the best? I'm always looking for new places too. This one I was at in Pembroke, it was called Arnold Hall. Never been there before. Nice area. But what are some of the best places you guys have been, or any particular graces you guys have had on your yearly retreat? I'm just assuming you follow canon law and have been on a retreat since being ordained.
Yes, of course.
Always canon law in all things.
You go ahead and quote the canon to me. I'm sure you know.
Yeah, we're big canon law guys here.
I mean, the best place I've done a retreat is the Mount of Beatitudes. So just whenever you can make that happen.
Oh, right.
In Galilee.
That's in Israel?
Is that the place? Yeah.
Totally unrelated to this. Somebody was asking me about retreats maybe 3 weeks ago, and I listed some retreat places. And I forgot until the very end of the conversation that I did a retreat in the Holy Land, which is a tough look.
You were very focused on all the places you were going out. But since I've been a priest, I've just gone back to basically two of the seminaries I was at. I'm excited this year. I'm going to the Little Sisters of the Lamb Monastery.
Oh, yeah, I like them.
In Kansas City.
Oh, so, nice.
How's your French? That's what they speak there, right?
Very Blaine. What? I don't even know how to say good.
Blaine?
Blaine.
Blaine.
I basically tried like Spanish.
We add an O when we're saying things in Spanish and they take one out.
You are an embarrassment to the diocese.
Yes, thank Blaine. You.
You're at a French parish, St. Margaret Mary Alacoque.
Yeah, I'm struggling.
Do they really speak French there?
I mean, they're a French order. Yeah. And
I knew that, but they speak French.
When I was up there, now this would have been 7-8 years ago. That was predominantly what they could speak English, but it was broken English. And they had a few new novitiates that spoke English, but the predominant language there was French when I visited them. I don't know how many years ago it was.
Like I said, I did one in the Holy Land before I was ordained a priest, which was pretty neat. That's not really replicatable, but you're able to like get up in the morning and go to what's called the Jesus Cave, which is something St. Jerome knew about 1700 years ago, which is this little cave that looks out onto Galilee, Sea of Galilee, right down from the Mount of the Beatitudes. And you could probably get like 4 people in this little cave space that you could watch the sunrise from there, or just pray from there, spend a lot of time in there.
Is it a common place? I've never heard of it.
It's up off of the road that goes along with Sea of Galilee. So you can basically see it from the road, but it's in between Capernaum and like Tagba and the
Tagba. Yes, that puts it in. Now I can picture exactly.
Maybe
where
a kilometer and a half between those places.
Kilometer and a half. You are giving me nothing of help.
The Tagba is where the multiplication of the loaves, and Capernaum is like a town. And so it's this cool place. You can just like hang out there and fall asleep there. If you can get there, so that'd be something to think about if you've saved X amount of dollars.
Someday I want to go to the Holy Land. I've never been. Someday. That's my goal before I die.
I went on and I split it between two places during the midst of a longer kind of trip. But the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is kind of the national shrine for Our Lady of Guadalupe. This beautiful, beautiful building built up on a hill. It's got stations all the way up. And then a great church and some religious priests live there. And so I stayed with them. And then I told some other people about staying with them and that they let me stay with them and some seminarians, stuff like that. And I was CC'd on an email several months later that I was not a part of from the leader of the priests there that just said, traditionally, we are not a guest house. Because I think they had heard that I was telling people that they could just stay there. But then half there and then half at Holy Hill outside of Milwaukee, which is a kind of a famous, again, religious order space. And so Wisconsin, a good place for retreats.
One of my favorite places, and it was similar, they're not typically a guest house. I don't know if I should say them. I had an inn. I knew someone involved in it. So location is one of the important things for me when I choose a retreat, because I want to be able to take long walks. I want to take somewhere beautiful, be able to walk around. I love the mountains. So if I find a retreat place in the mountains, I'm always interested in that. So this was the Holy Cross Novitiate House, which is in the Front Range of the Rockies. The house I was staying at, it was built by like a 1920s oil baron who left it to his daughter, who eventually left it to the Holy Cross. You know, got like Italian marble fireplace and pressed tin ceilings. It's a cool old building. The day I get there, black bears are swimming in the pond out front because it's just kind of off the beaten path. Yeah, it was a great area. And they had this nice little chapel. And I remember sitting there in the morning, you'd open up the window and the mountain breeze would just kind of come in there while you're saying your breviary there. And it was just a beautiful location.
And there was a baby in the adder's lair.
What's happening here?
So the sunbeam would just shine right down on the tabernacle and choirs of angels would
dancing
sing.
Dancing and sparkling in the moonlight.
It was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. And one of the great graces actually that I can remember from that retreat is at that point in my priesthood, I was struggling with some administrative responsibilities that had been given to me that I was trying to figure out. You know, you go into that when you're surprised, maybe self-pity. Well, I didn't become a priest for this, you know. All lies of the devil. But I happened to be reading John Chrysostom's On the Priesthood, and he had one line that, like, I've over the years have gone back and back to this line, and he's talking about how he left his in kind of hermitage monastic life to go help the Pope in Rome, and he's working there, and he says, you know, if I could choose between the monastic life and the administrative side of the church, I would choose the administrative side over and over again, because there is greater opportunity for me to grow in holiness and grace. He said, I love the monastic side, and that was beautiful, but the struggles that come with that administration are actually making me more like Christ and causing me to grow. And that was exactly what I needed to hear at that moment. And I said, I've gone back to it many times. So that is one of those graces that have carried forward, just a tremendous gift from the Lord in that time. And it was in that beautiful space. Like, I can still see myself sitting in that chapel, the bears hanging outside and the breeze coming through and reading St. John Chrysostom. And it was a fabulous retreat. But I've not been back to it, in part because they're not really a guest house. I knew someone.
Yeah, you should bleep out the name of what these are. Just have
one of my other favorite retreats, I think I mentioned before. So my first assignment was Our Lady of Lourdes down in Pittsburgh. And so I had the goal of, before I hit my 10-year anniversary, to do a retreat in Lourdes. So I went over to Lourdes, France, to the shrine, and I was doing a 5-day silent retreat there. And beautiful place, great place to pray, lots of graces. On the retreat, sometimes the Lord surprises me with graces in places I'm not expecting to find them. So it just happened to be that the week that I was there, you know, Lourdes is a big place people go to for all sorts of healing. And that week was specifically designated for people with various mental handicaps. So I didn't know that. The hostel I'm staying in, there is an Irish group there with a group, several Down syndrome kids and adults. And there was one young girl, just beautiful. She had Down syndrome, but just sweet as can be. And you would go down for dinner, and it was kind of a communal style dinner. So you all ate in one room. And if you were in a hurry and had somewhere to be, you wanted to make sure you got out of the dining room before this young woman. But if you didn't have, weren't in a hurry, it was beautiful. As she would walk out of the dining room, every religious picture she saw, every statue, which at a hostel for lords, there's a lot of them, everyone, she would stop and she'd kiss two of her fingers and touch them to the lips of the statue or the image, which was just something really sweet and beautiful. Yeah. You know, you go to the shrine, Lourdes, and there's all these tremendous things, but I found myself meditating on that through the week and just waiting to walk, purposely being slow to get up from my table just so I could walk behind this young woman, because it was just so joyous. It was so beautiful. And it was just a great witness of beauty in the ordinary, and just a selfless love and earnestness. It's an image that's more than anything I remember from the Shrine of Lourdes. Of that's the image that stays with me, and the grace and the gift that the Lord had given me.
Do you guys find it hard to, I mean, come back from retreat and like share the retreat? And we get grace from it, renewing in our priesthood. And I feel like a lot of times I get back and people are like, well, did you get some good rest? And it's like, well, I mean, honestly, I did. And I probably slept in and I maybe took a nap some days or whatever. But the point of me going on retreat was not to like get some rest, you know? And so sometimes I feel a disconnect there. Usually I just kind of laugh it off and say, yeah, but I almost wish I could share that a little bit more deeply with people. I don't know if you guys had that experience.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for that. A retreat seems like a priest thing or a week thing, that there's something going wrong. That's why I need a retreat, that there's something that I wasn't able to handle on my own. And so I had to go off and handle it, which is obviously so misguided and wrong. But I do think that we can have that in our own heart, but that people maybe, whether they acknowledge it or not, because they don't really get to go on retreat. Although I think that there's something to be said. We have a young woman who's a mother of two who goes to St. Paul, and she took about a 48-hour silent retreat last weekend. And her parents and her husband said, we're taking care of this for a few days to allow you to get that silence that you're going to need to be the best parent and wife that you're able to be. But I think there's something absolutely to be said about that, that it's hard to express why we need a retreat and why everyone needs a retreat, not just so I can sleep in, hang out, go for some long walks and get to bed at a decent time.
I understand your pull there, and it's easy here with the seminarians because I want to share with them the graces. I do make a point when I get back that, yeah, these are some of the things that the Lord provided me to think with, or these are some things I want to try. I agree with you, Drew. Everyone can benefit from a retreat. It's not just because we're broken or weak. I mean, we all are, that we all can grow from that grace from it. I think as a pastor, a lot of times, somewhere in the following 2 weeks, I would have a homily that would just bring something out of it. So it was almost like often like, I did get something good from this, or that will help in my ministry. So I found in preaching, I would usually at least somewhere, either a weekday or weekend homily, offer some grace that was given to me or some thought, but definitely more so here at the House of Formation. I talk with the guys. Like last night, we just ended up talking in the hallway for about 30 minutes after I got back and just sharing with them some of the things that were gifts of the retreat. Because my hope is if they're ordained priests, that they will go on their retreat every year and that they look forward to it. In many ways, I look forward to my retreat as much, sometimes more than the vacations I'm taking, because it is just, it's time to be alone with the Lord and in that relationship where I just don't have to worry about anything else and just, Lord, let's talk.
I need a place for this summer. So if the listeners have any suggestions, send them to us. Do you guys have any suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, I think it helped. I went to school there, both at Conception and at Mundelein, but they're both pretty beautiful grounds that gives you places to walk and a few different chapels to pray. And that's what I like, because I mean, I like pray before the Blessed Sacrament, but if you're in the same chapel all the time, it can get redundant, I guess. And so just kind of some different options of places to pray and beautiful places to walk around. So I enjoyed both of those.
Well, I'd recommend this place in the Rockies, but I'm not sure that's actually open.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what name to drop and then see what it happens.
Or just give me the address maybe, and I'll show up and see if I see black bears frolicking in the waters, I'll know I'm in the right place.
Offering you trays of food as you pull up to the drive. That's what they do there. Have you guys ever been on I wouldn't say bad retreat, a not ideal retreat maybe?
I don't think so. The only thing I notice that's key, I've been, most of the time I go by myself, but a couple times I've been with other priests. And just to be clear about expectations up front of, are we going to be silent for 5 days? Are we going to maybe be silent during the day and then have dinner together and share a little bit, just so that you're on the same page and expectations are clear? Because each guy maybe wants a little something different in terms of conversation and things like that.
Yeah, I can't say that I necessarily have been. I've had ones maybe where I wasn't mentally where I needed to be early on. And so, but that was just, that was on me, not on the retreat at all. Or I wasn't locked in silence-wise, particularly in some early years in seminary. And but that's on me. That's how you come into it. And the, hey, am I going to take this seriously? Am I going to dive in? Or am I going to survive until Friday?
I had one. I wouldn't call it a bad retreat because it wasn't, because the Lord is present. But I went to this place, and again, I thought it was in the mountains. I was looking at my map and where it was. I thought it was in the mountains, but in reality, it was just close to the mountains. So the mountains were in view, but it wasn't actually in it. And that would actually be how I would describe the religious order that ran the retreat house. They were close to Christian spirituality. They had it in view, but they weren't quite living fully in the tradition. And I didn't really know that until I was there. Again, the Lord was still there. I had some good prayer, but the retreat director wanted to talk about photography more than anything because that was his hobby. Right. Yeah, well, it was. Yeah. He had some. He was a good photographer. I remember every day it was like a surprise of who else is a priest here, because the order that lived there, they didn't wear any clerics and they didn't concelebrate. They just sat in there. And so you'd have a different celebrant each day. I'm like, oh, I didn't know he was a priest, or I didn't know he was a priest. I think I made them uncomfortable because I was concelebrating. I didn't know that was a taboo thing in that area. But yeah, so they were in sight of, it was valid mass. And,
it was retreat adjacent.
Right, retreat adjacent.
It's like when they put you got some good Airbnbs rest. And stuff, they're like ski lodge adjacent and things like that, mountains adjacent.
Yeah. But as I said, it wasn't, I wouldn't even call that a bad retreat. It wasn't what I had maybe in mind or the ideal, but the retreat spot might have been not ideal, but the Lord was still there. And that idea, I think that principle is something maybe we can keep in mind for our topic today of the Lord's going to be present no matter what. Even if maybe we're not in the right spot we're supposed to be in, the Lord's still going to be present and still available to work there. Because one of the questions that we run into contact with a lot is this idea of, well, what if I choose the wrong vocation? I think we've talked around that idea a little bit a time or two on the podcast, but I don't know if we've ever addressed it directly, looked at it straight on. Because when I see guys struggling with this, or even young women struggling with this, there tends to be a lot of anxiety wrapped around it. And they get themselves really worked up or really tied up in this idea, well, what happens if I choose the wrong vocation? So I don't know what advice you guys have offered to people when you run into that, or if you've run into that. It seems to be, I think, more common of late than maybe 15, 20 so years ago. Anxiety levels seem to be rising among that age bracket. And of discerners, it seems to be sometimes wrapped around this question, what if I choose the wrong vocation?
I think part of that is that we've seen, unfortunately, a rise in divorce and in broken families. So we've seen situations in which people have entered into things that at the time they legitimately thought were good and right. And then looking back on it, can see the lack of foundation, can see the break, can see, hey, we just need to move on.
That's a good, I never thought about that.
And
that's
so whether good. People would say that or not, I don't know that they would say that that's the reason.
Mm-hmm.
But when I interact, I guess I'd say with college kids, there's some of that lack of stability and long-term and forever aspect that has seemed like the exception rather than the norm. And so even if people desire deeply for their vocation to be forever, well, I've seen a lot of other ones where it seems to have been mistakes were made or changes taken place. Does that apply to me as well? Now, that language wouldn't be utilized. It's maybe only, hey, are we noticing some connections here? So I think that would be maybe part of it, is why we've seen a growth in that over the last few decades.
Yeah, I'd never thought of that, but I think you're right. That makes a lot of sense to me.
When I've encountered that, I usually go to an experience. I think I may have talked about it before, but just when I've met married men and they've opened up to me and said, basically, I think I was called to be a priest and now I'm married. And there's some anxiety there of like, did I screw it all up? Or can I even, there's something underneath there, even if they don't say it, of can I even go to heaven? You know, if I rejected God's will for me. And so, but I just speak about those people, those, especially it's men in my experience that I've met that have expressed that, and just say they're good fathers, they're good husbands now, and they can still be holy and be saints. And so it's a big deal, your vocation, but it's not such a big deal that you could like mess up God's ability to bring good out of whatever situation. Yeah, whatever you choose in that.
I think that's that idea that always has to underline in the discernment. God's not going to smite you for making the wrong choice, especially if it's made in goodwill. it's one thing if, okay, I am confident God's calling me to the priesthood, but I'm not going to do that. Even then, God's not going to smite you. But that's a whole different thing than I'm trying to make a discernment, and maybe I discerned something that the Lord was actually calling me to, that God is not going to smite you, and he will be there regardless of which vocation you choose. And he will provide a path to holiness. He will provide a path for love and self-sacrifice and self-give. You can't live a vocation without those things. So even if a person were to choose the wrong vocation, the Lord is still going to be there and still going to love them and provide them ways to love others. So that has to be an underlying principle, I think, at always when someone is getting themselves worked up over it.
I think we've talked about idol of clarity on here before. I think that's a big part of this, is that if I don't have 100% clarity, then there is a chance that I'm choosing something wrong. And if I'm wrong, then what's going to happen there? So I think all of the stuff that we've talked about previously has been a part of this. But I think it's helpful to remember that it's not like I'm making a decision tomorrow about my vocation. It's not like I'm, unless my wedding is tomorrow or my ordination, I'm not making that decision
exactly
tomorrow. And so that's part of the reason why we have 6 to 8 years of seminary. So you're going to have some time to think about it. And that's part of the reason the church makes people be engaged for a while. And people get mad of, hey, why we want to get married in 3 months. Why is that? So? Well, that's part of the reason, is that the church wants to give some runway and for some opportunities to look at some of these things and for us to have to stew in it a little bit and think about it. And if we get to the end of that, we've been honest with everyone and we're jumping in. Okay. There's only so much that can go wrong as far as my vocation. There's some things I can do wrong, of course, and there's tragedies and all of that. But that's why we build in time and we don't decide we're getting married or becoming a priest. We're not deciding that today.
I've given that exact advice to, I don't know how many people of, oh, I don't know if I'm supposed to be called a priest, and it's worrying me, and that's all I can think about. How old are you? 17. All right.
Scrapers.
Take a deep breath. How old are you? I'm a sophomore in college. All right. We got some time. Let's start talking with the Lord. We don't have to be anxious about this. I think I say that regularly. Take a deep breath. Discernment is hard, but it's not supposed to be crippling. If you find yourself so full of anxiety and agonizing over it, you're doing it wrong, okay? It is hard, and there are moments that just feel constricting as you decide. I don't want to downplay that. There are going to be some difficult times, but it's not supposed to be crippling. If it's crippling, you're misunderstanding some aspect of God and what he wants for your life or how he's working with you in your life. So take a deep breath. Calm down. You're not deciding this tomorrow. We've got some time.
If you've gone all the way through seminary, so if a young man, he discerns, he's in conversation with other priests, he joins the seminary, he's honest in his conversations and his spiritual direction, his conversations with friends, with his formation directors, things like that. He goes through the summer projects and classes and things like that. And he gets to his discernment at the end and ordination and believes he's called to be a priest. And the church believes he's called to be a priest. You've done what you've needed to do.
Right.
The Lord will take care of everything else. And you may have some moments as a priest, perhaps, where that bubbles up. And you're like, wait, what? But we've got to be able to go back to that foundation that you set. You've done the things that you've needed to do. Mm-hmm. Do I believe the Lord then would pull the rug out from under me? If I've done this 6 years of seminary, and if I've been honest, do I believe the Lord would pull the rug out from under me? If I think that that's an option, I've got some time to think about the God I believe in. Yeah. If I think that that's the option for how my life could turn out. And that's like the deepest thing. What kind of God, what kind of father do I believe in? I've got to acknowledge that first.
Yeah, if you're listening to the Lord and you're being honest in your conversation with him and your formators, God's not just going to let you float down some random river by yourself and, oh, I just ended up here. If you are listening to the Lord, if you're talking to him, he's going to nudge you along. If that's not where you're supposed to be, he's going to push you in another direction.
And that's why I asked, I remember Father Ben Sawyer, who's now a formator at Kenner Glennon, but a priest for our diocese. When I was teaching Totus Tuus the summer before I joined seminary, what's the most important thing for me to know as I joined seminary? His thing was be honest.
Yep.
Be honest with your formator and your spiritual director about what's going on in your heart. Because if you're honest, it's messier, but it'll work out better. And if you're not honest, it's cleaner. And then you might be freaking out if I've chose the wrong vocation or not.
Yeah, to me, it's just such a testament to the wisdom of, like you said, you're having that that runway before any vocation and just throwing yourself into to seminary. In the case of priesthood, it's like, I feel so anxious and I'm crippled in my anxiety about I could mess this up. It's like, okay, well, like, come to seminary, get the wisdom of the church. Then you're not like doing this so alone. And then it helps you to bear that weight and have some more confidence in that, because it is a weighty thing. And I think it was maybe Brett Brennan in his book and said, like, say you choose, quote unquote, the wrong vocation. We have to be honest, like, it will be harder for you. There may not be the ceiling max level of just fulfillment will probably be lower because God had made you for something else. So we have to be honest about that. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be a saint and be happy, but there it's going to be harder. So you want to really give yourself fully to discernment, but invite the church into that. So you have all the wisdom of the church and these priests and everything you're going to go through, like Drew said, to give you the most confidence to make the best decision.
Kind of related to that, one of our listeners sent in a question in an email and they asked, do you think your vocation can change? How would you guys respond to that?
I'd say, again, I just go back to this guy I was thinking of that he feels pretty confident that he was called to be a priest and now he's married and has kids. So his vocation changed in the sense of the way he's now called to be a saint and to go to heaven is now to have a wife and kids and give himself fully to them. And that's our deepest vocation, is self-gift in some way. And so, yeah, the Lord takes our free will into account. And so there is a change in that sense, I guess, what I'd say.
Yeah, you want to be careful to clarify your terms here in the sense of what type of vocation we're talking about, big V vocation, things like that. And there are some examples of history of married couples then becoming celibate, brother and sister, for the sake of the kingdom. That's a little different. That's not what we're talking about here. And so we want to be careful when we look at those things. I just wanted to acknowledge that, because then all of a sudden people are like, well, I had people ask me about Josephite marriage last night. And so we've got to like take a look at that. There are some examples in history of these types of things, but those are very specific kind of circumstances. And even vocation hasn't changed in that circumstance. They're living something out a little differently. But can a man be ordained a priest and then his vocation change to marriage? No. And so let's clarify there. Once I've made a promise, I fulfill that promise. Once I've made a promise to marriage, I fulfill that promise to marriage. And again, in these circumstances in which these kind of saints have lived different lives, okay, are the kids taken care of? Are both spouses on the same page? Those types of, it's a slightly different thing. There's not a breaking of vows, but the Lord's not going to ask us to break vows.
Right.
Which is an important thing to.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And so I think I would say, similar to what you two are saying, just it's a yes and a no. Do I think a vocation change? Well, God has, from the beginning of our creation, had a vocation in mind. That's not going to change. Now, we may choose a different vocation. Well, so it changes in that sense that, well, God will respond to that. He will give us a path in that way, and he will bless us in that. That doesn't undo that, well, when we were in God's mind initially, this is his plan for our life. That was always there. But if we choose something different, God will still work with that and provide the means to it. But I think it's a great point that God doesn't ask us to change our vows or to break any vows that we've made.
There's a story told about Hans Urs von Balthasar, who was a great thinker of the 20th century. I don't know if it's true, but we'll act as if it is true for the story.
If it's not, it should be.
That somebody asked him, what happens if you choose the wrong vocation? And he says, God immediately gives you another one. Mm. And he would be the first person to point out exactly what Gare is saying, that something has been lost there, something is missing there because of that. So it isn't to degrade that. But then, okay, we've made one decision. The Lord is immediately going to then start acting in that way. And God's will works like that in general. Like, perhaps God has something he wants me to say yes to. And I say no to it all the time in much, much smaller ways. Mm-hmm. And the Lord immediately then applies a different opportunity for grace because of that. And so for vocations, it's a more serious deal. Absolutely. And it shouldn't be like, well, I'll figure it out as I go. But he's not going to leave me hanging.
Right.
Yeah, it can be a happy fall. I mean, was God's plan A for humanity the fall? No, but he brought out even something even greater through that. So
yeah. And so I think then at the end of the day, we simply have to understand and know that, well, we have a loving God who has a plan for life, who's not going to leave us. And so if we're listening, if we are working with him, he's going to lead us towards the ideal plan. And if we make some mistakes along the way, he's still going to be there. He's still going to be loving and guiding us and providing us that way towards heaven. And I think that's where we will end today's episode. Thanks for listening to About 4 o'clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. And the final word today goes to Father Drew.
This is from St. Catherine of Siena. What is my nature? It is fire.
See you next week.